Hey, good day, folks. It's Tourism Tim Warren here with an amazing new episode of Tourism Marketing TV and Travel Business Success Radio Podcast. And we are starting a pretty amazing series today with my good friend Mike Lawley in Florida, and about a really important topic that most of you don't think about but can make a huge difference in your life. And that's how to start, build, and run your travel business or your lodge or whatever it is, so that ultimately you have the option to sell it for maximum revenues, make the most money along the way, and have the most fun. And so it is a process. And so that's why I brought my good friend on, Mike, who is an amazing entrepreneur and has recently has done just that. He built his business to sell and had a successful exit recently. And he has many wise words and fun stories to share. Good day, Mike.
Hey, Tim. Good day to you, too.
It's a pleasure to see you. Mike and I have enjoyed many adventures together, and I've had a lot of fun. And we that's how we met, is in the travel world, when I worked with Yannick Silver and Maverick. And Mike was one of our founding members. And I'll never forget, we were deep in Baja. We had just run a big, long day. We're sitting at a table, we're having a beer, there's some snacks, and you sat down next to me, and within 5 minutes you were asking, well, what's your guys' business strategy, and you know, what you gonna do about retention, and how are you gonna grow the membership? You had all these great entrepreneurial business credits, and I thought, this guy's really sharp.
It gave us something to do in between beers, Tim. That was good. That was enjoyable. Absolutely. I have to compliment you too, Tim, on that trip. When we arrived, the first thing that happened at the hotel, we were coming in and there were chocolates on the pillows, tequila-filled chocolates, and great attention paid to detail. The over-the-top customer service is something that really impressed me with that.
Thank you. Well, it's and where you and I are going to talk about that today is to where does that fit into the overall big picture of building your business to maximum revenues now and when you sell, and have the most fun? So it is key. So why don't we just jump into it and find out about your kind of your background? But actually, before I do that, I wanted to just make a point here. This Mike and I decided we're going to build this series. It's going to be a series of interviews and really digging into this topic. But one of the great books that Mike shared with me, which I should have right here to share, but I'll have this in the show notes, folks, on Travel Business Success, is it's called Built to Sell. There it is. All right. Built to Sell. And Mike there's a lot of good stuff in there that we're going to be paralleling in this interview. But one of the key things that I really have gotten out of the book, and that's important for you as the listeners or viewers, is that if you follow this, it's not unusual for people to cash out at 25, 50% or many multiples more of what they put in their pocket at the end of the day. What's been your experience about that, Mike?
Yeah, that's it's the thing that we found, Tim, and it's the fun thing that most people run into when you run your business. You start it up, and then you get kind of the euphoria of the startup and things working, and then as things grow, you get caught up in the grind of business. And succeeding in business is hard. That even good problems that you have, great growth curves, then you've got operational challenges, you've got to meet the growth, you've got to find funding and cash to support the growth. And in the end, it turns out that the balance of the demands of the business and then kind of what you do to get by, kind of the corners you cut sometimes, because there's only 24 hours in a day and you got to focus on certain things. And what it really comes down to, by the time you come to sell your business, it's a mishmash of doing some things that you're great at, some things that you just do because you know you've got to get done, some things that you don't do. Maybe we'll talk a little bit later about that, why that maybe you don't even know about them, or maybe you just don't like them. And then also, when you're running a small business, you'll also take perks and benefits and things like that out of the business. And starting when you get prepared to sell, you want to take a look at how you're running those things as well. because your top dollar for a business is going to be had when you're running a business that is successful. And successful to a buyer is a predictable business. It's got a known model. It's got a known outcome. It's going to be able to have predictable growth. It's got systems built into it so that it has I look at the levels of successful, repeatable, and scalable as moving through how you run a business. So really, if you can deliver those items, and there isn't any business on the planet that when it starts prepping to sell doesn't have holes that it needs to fill in. As you work and fill in those holes and prepare it for a buyer, you're not doing things just for a buyer. You're running an excellent business. And at the end, if what you're running is excellence, that's what's going to command the top dollar.
Yeah, and excellent point. And it's going to make it much more attractive to buyers out there. It's a competitive market. And I know in the travel industry, there's a lot of businesses out there that are on for sale or will be coming on sale as kind of, especially in the adventure travel space, as many of these founders really looking for the next phase of their life and exit strategy. So Mike, I just want to share that although Mike's background is not directly in the travel business, what I can say is he's definitely an entrepreneur. There's a lot, everything that we're going to talk about in his business and his background totally applies to you. So why don't you kind of give us just a quick background of your startup and scaling of the business that you were involved with.
Sure. I'm second generation in a family business that centered around sensors. So our customers were everything from single solopreneur consultants, acoustic consultants, to companies as large as Ford or General Motors or government institutions like NASA. Pretty much anybody who made a product that moved would be interested in buying our sensors that were in the sound and vibration space. And I was one of five brothers that were all involved in the business. And the business, father and uncle founded it and took it to about 120 employees. And then as the second generation took it over, we grew to over 1,000 employees. And the largest, two brothers in Buffalo, ran the manufacturing hub, which was over 800 employees. I was running a cross-functional division within the company that was a systems level company that handled calibration systems, test system, things like that, out of Cincinnati, Ohio. And there were about 65 people in the division that I was working with. And as we grew, we had all the challenges that we had, challenges with customer service, we had challenges with delivery time, we had challenges with quality and production, we had challenges with service, you name it, that nothing, you know, nothing like success and growth brings out more challenges. And it was a good ride. It was nice. We learned a bunch, had a very successful exit. And that's kind of my background on the business side. I went to school for this technology. I went to grad school for it and then had a 25-year career in it. But I also enjoyed on the side travel adventure where you and I met and did a number of trips through traveling through the Baja, doing the Baja racers. We did zero-G flights. We did the fighter trainers, laser tags, and in Las Vegas, we went to Iceland, we did snowmobiles, we dove for Silfra, just that side of things as well.
30,000 foot skydive.
Ah, yeah. Okay,
there's that.
That was awesome.
Dressed as Elvis, a group team of Elvises, and did a B Street bar crawl.
That was good.
We had fun. But it was all business. And what I want to point out, folks, is that's the same things that Mike had a passion and for engineering. He followed that passion, which is a lot like you. You have a passion for a region, a sport, a being in service, and that's what drew you to being in the travel industry, a travel entrepreneur. So the things you face growing your business or manage your team or scaling is exactly the same thing that Mike and his family did. They're just on a bigger level. But that there's lots of parallels. So go on about your passion for adventure travel.
Yeah. Well, I want to loop back because you brought the customer service aspect into it. The the adventure travel was awesome. It was great to get out of the office and burn energy and kind of network with like-minded professionals. The group at the time was Maverick Business Adventures. The piece that really held me in that was the commitment to customer service. And for us to succeed as a sensor business, we were business to business selling, but it's still about taking care of the customer. There was the end user engineer or the end user technician who was trying to get his job done. And but we had to sell through layers of management. There was approvals, complex sales, things like that. There were plenty of places to get derailed or frustrated, but you always had to remember it was, how do you take care of that user? How do you make that experience for him or her awesome? And that's something really that my father and uncle catalyzed in the early days of the company with what we turned into a total customer satisfaction guarantee. And we had, you know, we could be selling something that was a $300 sensor, or we could be selling a $300,000 test system. And in the end, we had a money-back guarantee that if there was a problem and we couldn't make it right for the customer, then we were going to stand behind it and we would repair it, replace it, or give a refund. And what that does is it makes you work really, really hard. When you have a problem and there's a mistake, and instead of assuming it was the customer's mistake, or instead of, it's in the gray area, or sometimes during growth, it was our blatant mistake. We'd work very hard to earn the trust from those customers. And that's frankly where we earned a lot of our long-term loyalty, is not just the good service. It's what happens. What does a company do when something bad happens?
Yeah.
Stand behind to that promise, or they duck and run? And is it just lip service?
Yeah.
So, that's something that really grew our company. And I saw that within Maverick, which you were doing, what Yannick was doing, and that service aspect and money back guarantee was amazing.
Cool. And folks, I'm going to continually bring us back and draw the parallels that I know that sometimes you forget, is that whether you're selling a $300,000 product or you're taking someone down the American River for a day of rafting, does stuff happen? Absolutely. Some of it within your control, but some of it outside of your control. And as Mike just pointed out, which is really foundational to the hospitality, any industry, but especially a service-oriented industry, is standing behind it and doing whatever it takes to make the customer happy, and including your internal customers, which is your staff. We're going to talk about more about that later as one of the core elements. And this first video was designed to be kind of an overview of some of the core areas that you must be focused on to run and grow and sell a successful travel business. And certainly your team is the key to that. So, Mike, why don't we jump into some of the we've got an outline here, folks, that we're going over, because Mike and I collaborated on this, and I want to make sure that we're covering this well. So there was two presenting problems that a lot of entrepreneurs, when they're engaged, either doing or not doing, or they know that they should do, or they don't know that they don't know. And so, under the concept of running your company like a business, let's jump into, Mike, the kind of what don't many small businesses do? And I like what you wrote, things they don't know. So let's talk about that a little bit. What is that for you? And item number one, what is that item that we're going to touch on?
Sure. That's the first thing that in anything. And when we were starting different divisions in our business, it was the same thing. There's a level of sophistication and a level of technology that when you're starting up, you don't know about. You're doing what you need to do to take care of customers and get orders and deliver results. And that's how most businesses start. And so I lump those things under one of the challenges is you don't know what you don't know. And those typically fall into either technology areas or best practices, things like that. Even simple things on accounting, making sure that whoever's opening the mail and depositing the checks are different people. There's different checks and balances your accountant will give you. And it's very tempting to say, well, we're a small organization. These things don't apply to us, or we don't have money for that, or I don't have time for it. But this is a show where we're talking about how do you prepare for a sale. And these are the types of little pieces of discipline and little pieces of practice and technology that you start adding. And so it's less about me telling, well, you exactly need this or that, and more about saying, where do I get this knowledge? And where you get the knowledge is look for, say, like an executive roundtable at your chamber of commerce, be able to participate with other businesses of similar size that you have. I participated in the Cincinnati Chamber of Commerce roundtable for years and would pair, and I'd always make sure there were some bigger companies than me in the roundtable so that I could always be getting a look ahead on what I needed to do in the next level of scale. You can get this information from your advisors, from your accountant, from your lawyer, from if you're using an outsourced IT firm. They work with tons of business, so asking about these best practices and what they do. And you can also get it from a coach or advisor. Lots of businesses seek out a business coach. They want to make sure that there's kind of a combination of somebody helping them, looking for their blind spots, and also kind of helping them with accountability and pushing too. So any of those three areas are good ways to find out technology areas or practice areas that typically fall into finance or IT.
We're going to cover more about this later in a future episodes, folks, but I think the key thing what Mike is saying is not only do you need to integrate these systems and new technologies or whatever it is into your operations, but then you also thinking long-term, thinking about that buyer is, and we'll talk about this more later, is the documentation of the systems and how does it flow and how do we integrate this in so that things run smoother, more efficiently, more profitably, we serve the customer better, because that's the kind of thing that a future buyer is absolutely going to be looking at, especially on your core systems. They don't want to reinvent the wheel. They want to know, as Mike said, they're buying a future possibility and they want to know that you got your act together and they're not having to clean up your dirty laundry.
Yeah, and that kind of dovetails very nicely into the second things is, so number one was what don't they most do, things you don't know you should be doing, and then the second one is just things you don't like doing.
And, oh, you're kidding, there's things that people don't like to do in business? No way.
Go figure. And anybody who runs a small business, if you're a creative type, then lots of times the operational side's a drag on you. If you're an operational type, then lots of times the creative and marketing side's a drag on you. It's also why so many founders come in partner pairs, so that two people pair up and match each other's style. The keys in this area are kind of twofold. Is one, discipline. If you want to find out where your discipline's lacking, immediately ask your partner, because your partner knows every one of them, because it drives them nuts, typically. Yeah. Uh-huh. And your partner will be able to tell you where things might be lacking. And the idea is looking at those systematically. So it's coming up with where the discipline areas are. They could be documenting critical processes, saying, well, I don't have time to do that, and I do it all, so why should I write it down? Which leads to a whole nother challenge. One of the other major pieces about prepping your business for a sale is being able to successfully design yourself out of the process. If you're selling business and you're required to stay in the middle of it, you're not a business model, you're an entrepreneur service provider, and what they're buying is you, and there's a pretty good chance you're not interested to work for somebody else over the long term. So that puts the wrinkle in the middle of it, and that's what oftentimes devalues, because the purchaser will say, oh gosh, I got to go out and hire a sales guy to do what you're doing. I got to hire a part-time marketing guy. I need to have some operations. Maybe you're doing some maintenance on your fleet or your vehicles that you're supplying, whatever it is. that you're good at. And chances are, if you're the owner founder, you're good at just about everything in the business. And that works for you as you're growing, but that actually works against you as it comes time for sale. If you don't have things in place, the processes and people to show, here's how the ship keeps sailing smoothly when I'm gone.
Yeah, and that's a common theme, folks, we're going to be visiting throughout this entire series, as far as having the systems and the personnel in place so that things run with ultimately without you, because that will be a key element for you maximizing your getting out of this. And besides having and I know that all of us have got parts of our business that we don't like to do, and it's critical that they are not only they're done, but the processes are set up. And one of them is a record management, which was one of the things we had down here, and documenting what's going on. And I've got something to share on that, but first, maybe you could share a little bit for record management. What does that mean for you, Mike? What's been your experience? What do you recommend?
So one of the pieces is, in the old days, it used to be the classic box of receipts, a shoebox full of receipts handed off to the accountant saying, here, you figure out how to expense and categorize these. And nowadays, it's so simple to keep track, you know, download an app, be working directly from your phone, so you can scan a receipt and directly account for it. It's really, there's no excuse anymore for not having rudimentary sound record keeping in the financial end of things. But not just the financial end of things, the other side, and it amazes me how many places are still on paper. And I can see why in some cases, because it seems like I want to get to taking the person on the event or travel or supplying my, you know, whatever it is they've rented from me. But the business picture, you've done a lot of marketing, or you've extended some great service or word of mouth to attract that client. In the end, you want to be able to keep those clients. You want to be able to remarket to those clients. You want to be able to take them back out with their family. You want their friends to come out. And customer records are huge. And it amazes me how many companies don't maintain good customer records, don't have farming lists where they're sending out a monthly or quarterly newsletter, something of value to the customers to keep them engaged. And that's really a key, is that's the most inexpensive sales are the ones to our already existing customers. So investing in being able to capture their critical information, their name, their email, their physical address, and be able to remarket to those are some disciplines that are key to maintaining significant valuations when you go to sell.
It's one of your biggest assets, not only as Mike said, when you go to sell, but right now. You want to sell, you want to get more butts and boats, more heads and beds. You got to be connecting with your alumni. You need to have, you have to be working your prospects. You have to be working that. So folks, if you got nothing else out of this first series, because I know this is something you can do, is start segmenting your list, start documenting things. I even have a client that's still barely tracking his prospects when they're calling in. And I said, how are you keeping track of it? How are you following up? Because I don't know, I'm putting on a piece of paper and they're floating around my desk here somewhere. And I thought, oh my God, these transactions are worth about $3,000 each. And they're not, and you're not following up. They're not going into the database so that we can follow up with them. I said, we're losing money here. Big time. Yeah. So
I like that term you used, Tim. Alumni is a beautiful term for the customers in the adventure travel space, because just like somebody going to college and they have them there for 2 or 4 years in college and come through an experience and come out alumni with an affinity for that university, that's the same thing in the adventure space. They're really with you. They're going through some intense or beautiful experience that's going to be burned into their memory, and you're really creating alumni of your organization or of your experience. And just like universities market back to graduated students for giving an association, you're going to market back to for return trips and word of mouth as well.
It is huge, folks, and it's getting people, because when they come back from these epic experiences, they've shared with friends, or often they've met new friends like Mike and I, and so many of us have met through our travel experiences, is that there, you know, you want that alumni to be passionately sharing what they felt about the experience, the company, with all their friends and family. And so, you know, and so they are become your top salespeople. This is a topic we're going to dig into more later, folks. Let's jump into the last of the really the key elements of really building your business out, because there's kind of these core vessels that there's a lot of detail in them, but there's these core dentals vessels. And the last one was growing your management team. And you touched upon it earlier, Mike, about going from the solo entrepreneur to an entrepreneur. Why don't you share a little bit about that concept? Because I know this is the biggie for most of the business, small to medium-sized travel, tourism, and hospitality people around the world I've connected with, consulted with, met, traveled with. This is it. This is the bane. And when they've had some success evolving from that solo entrepreneur to mom-and-pop thing to an entrepreneur, and they're stuck in this solo entrepreneur, small business mindset, and it's not serving them.
Yeah, there's a lot of ways things can get tangled at this point, because this being a solopreneur or wearing many hats and doing the jobs, the first part is in sustainable business model. It's wonderful if you can do three or four different jobs, and then it's wonderful if you're burning the candle at both ends and really passionate about your business. However, when a prospective acquirer comes in and looks at that, they're going to see the number of hours you put in, they're going to see the types of expertise you bring to the table. And in fact, most entrepreneurs, most founders are underpaying themselves for the amount of work they do and the type of work they do. And that while it's wonderful that you're there, you can do all those things. If a prospective acquirer has to hire 2.5 people to replace you in the different roles you do, those are actual salaries that they're going to put in their acquisition model on what it will cost to continue to run the business. So it's a catch-22 when you say, well, I can't afford to do that, and I take on more myself to get things done and make a profit by working harder and longer myself. What I need to do is start working smarter, and what I need to start doing is looking at my business model and pricing and say, where am I creating over-the-top value that people would be willing to pay more for, that they could, instead of always looking at it and saying, I need to be cheaper than the next guy, how can I stand out from the crowd and be better or be the best in my space so that customers say, wow, this is, you know, here it is. Yeah, it, you know, he charges for it or she charges for it, but man, it is worth it. They are so good. And what you're looking at doing then is creating a business model that's got adequate top line revenue to be able to fund the expenses that you need to do, having proper person or outsourcing of maintenance and repair, having a marketing program, having all the pieces that you need to have in line to say, having sales guys. That's also you see all the time where the founder owner is the number one best sales guy and never has somebody filling behind him because it's frustrating. Whoever you bring in, they don't know it. They're not as passionate, or they don't have 20 years of experience, or they just want to make money and close the sale. There's all these reasons it can be frustrating, but to grow your business into something that has a solid business model and is run with excellence that somebody would want to pay a premium to acquire, you have to get those things in order. And this, what we're talking about, this isn't a start 6 months before I want to sell. This is typically a minimum of a 3-year preparation before you're ready to start marketing yourself or marketing the business for sale. You want to start working on these things.
I'm really glad you brought the timeline up, Mike, because unfortunately, too many people don't anticipate this. And they, as far as this timeline, really what it takes to build themselves out of their daily operational models and fill in those key places to make it more attractive to the buyer. And it is taking a long time. And that's why in a future episode, folks, we'll grow your management team and looking at culture, systems, managing, and getting that all together and getting it solid. So you really are working yourself out of the system and making more money and actually maybe focused on the bigger picture, focused on adding more top line value. How can you stand out from the crowd? And it's harder to work in the bigger picture and to go to the next level when you're so deeply engaged with daily ops and you can't see the forest for the trees. So the more we can help you extract yourself from that, the bigger the opportunities now for short-term revenues, but ultimately you will cash out with a lot more money in your pocket when we help you grow yourself out of the business. So I think because Mike and I were talking, it's like, oh my God, this is such a big topic. And there's these subtopics. We could talk for hours and hours and hours. And that's why we decided to do a series on this. And so that is our intention, folks, is to do a series on this. I'm so appreciative, Mike, of your willingness to share and to teach. One of the things I've always appreciated about you is you bring countless years of experience from all different walks, not only your own business, but things that you've gleaned from mentors and other business people and brought it into best practices. I know you're a lifelong student. You're always studying people who have been there, done that, and have got wisdom or insights or growth opportunities to share or learning opportunities to bring to bear. So I'm really tickled and honored and grateful that you're willing to do this with me and share this with the global tourism, travel, and hospitality world. Thank you.
Yeah, my pleasure doing it, Tim. That kind of brings us to the summary part on one of the pieces was beginning with the end in mind. That comes from Stephen Covey's book, mm-hmm. Seven Habits. Everybody knows that, and it's, you know, kind of gets quoted flippantly. But really, if you're not selling and you want to, you know, have your second generation, one of your children run your business, that's great too. But as long as you know that's what you're going to do, then you continue. You probably still want to get some of these things in some of your procedures, in some of your business systems in order, because there's a pretty good chance your second generation isn't exactly the same skill set that you are. And I've seen that a lot of times. There's an old Swedish adage that first generations found the company, second generations grow the company, and third generations kill the company. it's kind of with the tongue in cheek, but what it is, it's really the founders do what it takes to get done and customer service and product. And then as you go into a second generation, the second generation really builds the infrastructure around a company and grows it. And many companies have a hard time going into the third generation for a host of reasons that involve differences in what's an owner versus what's a shareholder, and could be competition within the family and birth order and on that. But for this case, it, you're really looking at first generation or second generation. It's what do you want to do? You want to grow it and sell it and put some money in your pocket? Do you want to keep growing it and run it? Do you want to pass it on to a second generation? Do you want to have a management buyout? Do you have a right-hand man or woman that really you think would be excellent at continuing to run your business? Even if you were going to do that, you wanted to sell it out to someone within it, and they may be considering taking a bank loan to buy it out, secured against the business and likely their personal assets as well. But the better organized the business is, running with excellence, with the type of systems and culture that we'll talk about in future weeks, the better job you'll be able to do with that person buying to convince the bank, hey, this is running smoothly. This is predictable and automatic, and this is where we're going to generate the revenue and the profit to service the debt. And any way you slice it, it ends up a better deal in your hands and for the acquirer if you look at these things now.
And I think a key, these are big decisions, and you may not know just where you're going to go now, folks, but this is about giving you choices, giving you more options so that you have can walk any of those paths, but your systems, your operations, your business will be in order. So you have those choices as opposed to finding yourself in a situation with, oh my God, I'm retiring, or I don't have enough money, and I've got to sell this business, and your choices are a fraction of what they'll be if you walk this path that Mike and I are talking about. And really, at the end of the day, this is about starting and growing and running your business, not only for maximum revenue now, but have more fun, have less stress, and to have more choices in the back end for yourself, for your loved ones, if you should pass this on, or, you know, your staff. I mean, that management acquisition is a great business model too. And we'll be talking more about that. Mike, we need to wrap this puppy up. And I just want to kind of give people just a quick snapshot of what they can look forward to. And what I think you should do, folks, is that one, there's going to be some on travelbusinesssuccess.com. There's always going to be resource pages on every show that we publish. I'm going to probably strip out the audio on this and make it available as a podcast. I'm still trying to figure that out. But on Travel Business Success, there definitely will be a notes page with some of the resources that we talk about, whether it's books, systems, best practices. So I really want to encourage you to go there. I'm also working on creating a checklist on that's going to be paralleling in a very simple way what we're talking about throughout the series, and how, you know, create your travel business to sell, how to start, build, and sell your travel business for maximum revenues now and for fun. So look for that on Travel Business Success. This will be a free download for you folks. The couple of the topics we're going to jump into, I guess we're going to dig a little deeper next, Mike, I believe, on running your company like a real business and real business rules, and which was the first topic we covered. And some of those specifics will be discipline versus a convenient excuse, focusing on your niche, compensation pros and cons, market value for performing roles for this is about staff, and creating positive cash flow, building your intangibles, which is a huge aspect of especially travel businesses, where we're talking about your brand, your marketing, your alumni, and then we'll dig into deeper later on in other segments on some of the challenges we covered. Mike, any closing comments or suggestions or wrap up that's occurred to you this morning?
No, I think it's wonderful what you're doing here, Tim, because the typical small organization, so maybe you're 3 to 5, or maybe you're up to 20 or 30, but the typical small organization is really the kind of backbone of small business and getting things done across the United States, across the world, and specifically in adventure travel. And bridging that gap of saying, geez, I've worked in this for 10, 15, 20, 30 years. My sweat equity has to be worth something. And it is. You've made a ton of people happy and great times, great trips, and you've propagated and grown a business and employed people. You want to have your valuation of what you think the company's worth and what a prospective acquirer, have those be as close as possible. Because the classic scenario is the founder believes the valuation's worth 2 or 3 or 4 times what the acquirer believes. And when you bring in the accountants and lawyers to do valuations, they're looking at objective factors. They're looking at cash. They're looking at procedures. They're doing discounted cash flows, things like that. And if you don't pay attention to these things of getting, it's kind of like stepping up from the minor leagues to the major leagues. And you don't have to be the ultimate pro athlete and be gifted in all these in certain ways, but anyone can go from the minor leagues to the major leagues in running a business by paying attention to these things. And that brings the two sides of valuation closer together, which A, makes it more likely that a deal will be done, B, more likely that there'll be multiple suitors for a well-run business, which competitive pressure will then drive the price up. And in the end, that's a better deal for you as the founder and owner, being able to have choices in being able who would be the right buyer to transition to take care of your business, take care of your alumni, take care of your employees, and provide a good deal for you in cashing in your life's work.
I'm excited about this, Mike, that we're talking about. This is really big, and I think this is going to help a lot of people around the world. So thank you again, Mike. Thank you for all that are watching this, listening, taking notes, and also get your questions together on travelbusinesssuccess.com. Below each show posting, there'll be a place for questions. Ask your questions. That's Mike and I are here to help you. And there'll be other people we'll be bringing into this series, but this is going to be really the foundation that will help start you on this path. So again, Mike, thank you, sir. And we're going to sign off on this episode and look for us soon, folks, we dig into this a little deeper.
My pleasure, Tim. Take care, buddy.
Take care. Bye-bye.